Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan. My pronouns are she, her.
I'm Joe. My pronouns are they, them.
I'm Kate. My pronouns are she, her.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, guys.
Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I am too excited.
There's no such thing as too excited.
Oh, I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
You'll prove us wrong.
Kate has promised us a bit later, a game, if you will, and I'm very excited for it because that's not something that we usually do, and
yeah.
You know what? I'm here for it. I'm excited.
We really need the Travis to our... Who are you?
Oh, Justin? I'm Griffin.
You're Griffin, I'm Justin.
You're
Justin. That's pretty obvious, actually. Sorry. I don't know even why I asked that question here.
I am pure raging ADHD.
You are Trav Nation.
I'm so sorry
to all of our listeners who have never listened to My Brother and Me, or The Adventure Zone. That was a deep cut.
That was annoying.
But hey, we're here. Goofy, and we just celebrated Independent Bookstore Day, and so we're all a little bit punchy. But yay, indie bookstores. Hooray.
Woo!
Yay!
And so later, we'll get into some fun stuff, but... For now, different fun stuff. Let's talk about things that we've been reading, things that we might currently be reading. I will start. I just read a book that's coming out this fall that I am, like, so excited to hand sell.
Okay.
It's Guillotine by Delilah S. Dawson, who wrote Bloom, which was like, what if Hannibal was a lesbian who hung out at a farmer's market and sold cupcakes?
Incredible. Human cupcakes?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay.
Red Velvet.
And it's like sapphic and disgusting, and I loved every second. Guillotine, the blurb that I wrote upon immediately finishing Guillotine, which I did read in one sitting... If you've ever fantasized about rounding up the worst of the worst of the billionaires and giving them exactly what they deserve, this is the book for you.
Yay.
It's ultra-violent, it's wildly cathartic. Eat the rich, or at least torture and kill them.
Fantastic.
I'm on board.
I'm so, so excited for this book. She has another book that's coming out, like, either a month before or a month after Guillotine, and it's called It Will Only Hurt for a Moment. And that one, I'm only a little ways into it, but so far I'm loving it. It's a woman who has escaped an abusive relationship, and she's at this, artist's retreat in the mountains somewhere, and so naturally there's no cell service, there's no Wi-Fi, but it's all on purpose because there are a bunch of artists, and like that's the whole point, is to like separate yourself from society to, you know, work on your art. Yes, historically goes super well every time. And yeah, she's just gotten there at the point I am in the book, and already weird things are happening.
Wonderful.
Like, she goes to her cabin, and there's just, like, a dead, rotting animal on her bed, and it looks like it's been placed there, so now she has to stay in, like, a creepy cabin that was not prepared for guests at all. There's, like, some of the other artists are just, like, giving skeezy vibes. There's, like, a really terrifying haunted doll installation in the woods. Like, just, like, weird things are happening. And I can't wait to see where this book goes because I cannot predict a single thing right now. I have no idea where it's headed. So very excited for that. So, like, if y'all like horror and you haven't discovered Delilah S. Dawson yet, please start reading her. She writes a whole bunch of other stuff, too, but I am particularly fond of her her recent horror novels. She's crushing it.
Fantastic.
She was on the podcast last year for Bloom.
Oh, yeah.
She is lovely. Let's see. What else? I listened to The Husbands by Holly Gramazio.
I've heard good things about that
one. It's super fun.
Yeah.
It's super fun. It's a woman discovers that she has a magic attic when she comes home late one night, very hungover, and there's a man in her apartment, and he's her husband, apparently.
Now, this is a good magic attic? Because
well,
sounds like my nightmare.
It's kind of her nightmare. too.
Okay.
Because she's single as far as she knows, but here's this man who knows all these things about her, and there's all these wedding photos on her phone and all over her apartment, and she's like, did I coma? What happened? Why do I not know this person? And then she sends him back up into the attic, and a different husband comes down.
Ooh.
And thus begins this sometimes hilarious, sometimes not hilarious, sometimes very sweet, sometimes very bittersweet cycle of her sending these husbands back up into the attic and getting a new one. It's a whirlwind, like, year, basically, of rotating husbands. And every time she gets a new husband, things in her life change just a little bit. And so it's like she's almost trying to find the perfect husband that fits her life in such a way that, like, she still has the job she likes. Her sister is still married to her partner. She still has her niece and nephew. Right? Like, she still talks to her family. Like, all these little things. Like, she's hoping. And also, she likes the husband. Like, so she's, like, trying to find the perfect husband. And shenanigans ensue. And it's great. It's honestly, like, I wasn't sure what tone it was going to strike. I wasn't sure if it was going to be just outright funny or if it was. And it's a little, like, it's kind of. It fits in that kind of general fiction, like, it has funny moments, but it also, like, is very just, like, sweet and, like, looks at, like, what makes a good relationship and kind of what's really important in all of this as well, and kind of, you know, she has some self-discovery. It's very nuanced. Nice. I liked it a lot.
I remember seeing, so the editor was at the New England Booksellers Conference that we went to in the fall, and she also picked up Bonnie Garmus's Lessons in Chemistry. Like,
yeah.
She's really good at picking debuts that are going to hit well with a very certain audience. And so I gave it to our coworker, Sam, who had loved Lessons in Chemistry. She really liked this one. Like, I think even if it's a different vibe, editor seems to have a good sense of picking.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, even though the plots are very different, I actually think it does strike a similar tone as Lessons in Chemistry, as far as, like, yeah, there are, like, some funny moments, and maybe, like, the plot overall is, like, maybe a little bit sillier out there, but the kind of self-discovery and kind of, like, taking a step back and looking at your life is very
yeah,
similar. So yeah, I that's a good comp, actually. Yeah, that was a yeah. when she pitched this at that, I was like, I want that. What is that? I want that book. What is that?
And that sounds awesome. I know lots of people who want this.
yeah. So that was really fun. And then I read "Can't Spell Treason Without Tea" by Rebecca Thorne, which I would say, for everybody who really liked the vibes of Legends and Lattes, but almost want to dial up the adventure just, like, a little bit.
All right.
Like, still cozy, but, like, with some action, this is that. So you've got a Queen's Guard who runs away with her mage girlfriend to open a bookshop.
Cute.
It's very cute. There's adventure, there's dragons, there's small town drama, there's drama with the queen. It's delightful. It's very, very sweet. And again, like, it strikes that cool balance of, like, the day-to-day running of the bookshop and, like, getting to know the people in the small town. But also there's, like, battles with dragons and griffins, and there's, you know, the queen, like, hunting down this queen's guard who has left her post when she wasn't supposed to, and is, like, maybe committing treason, but also, like, her girlfriend is the most powerful mage in the land, so the queen can't, like, yeah, it's okay. It's cool. Nice. It's fun. I liked it a lot.
Is that one out yet, or?
It's about to come out in May 7th, so about to come out. Very, very soon. So that's a fun one. Let's see. What else? Oh, I read one that had been on my list for a really long time. So it's been out for a little bit. It's a horror novel called Schrader's Cord by Scott Leeds. And this is, like, my review is basically just cursed records! Cursed records!
Okay.
More cursed than Paul Schrader's Facebook status.
Well, basically, there are four cursed records, and if you play them simultaneously, you might open a gate between life and death, and you will probably not like the consequences, like seeing all these dead people and also your own death.
I'm tempted.
It's quick. Kate's about to do it. Kate's like, where are they?
Yeah. You go hunt down these four records.
Are they at Pitchforked?
Record store day was weird this year.
Record store day took a turn.
I was not expecting that portal.
It's really good. It's great for horror fans who are also into good music. I mean, they like the amount of really good music that is mentioned throughout this book. Nice. Like, there's probably a Spotify playlist of this book.
Incredible.
It's great. I liked it a ton. Again, it was one that like I had picked up an arc of it probably a year or so ago, and like it's been on my list to read, and I finally got a chance to read it, and I was like, yep, that was worth it. That was awesome.
Yes, Scott Leeds has made a playlist on Spotify.
There we go. Thank you, Scott. Beautiful.
I couldn't leave that. Oh, and look, there's some David Byrne.
Recommend
to Sam. I assume you're recommending.
I have not yet, but I will.
This
will absolutely be her jam. A couple others. I read Anniebot by Sierra Greer, which is a really interesting exploration of AI and femininity and humanity and also abusive relationships. So Annie is a robot. She is owned by Doug, who is a manipulative, emotionally and verbally abusive man who gets off on having power and influence over Annie.
Cute.
Literally, his red flags can be seen from space. Like, this guy's the worst. I found this book very interesting because, like, Annie is designed as basically a sex bot. And she was my favorite character in the whole book. I rooted for her and her autonomy. Like, she's very, like, I'm going to say smart AI. Like, the people who created her, she's an experiment within all of the other bots. Like, they did something different with her to see what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is, like, ahead of where the other bots are, and so she has more autonomy, and so she starts trying to like learn things on her own, and then she starts to notice that maybe Doug is not great, and maybe she shouldn't just be trying to please him all the time, and maybe she should try to escape, and let's see what happens then. It's really good. I think I'm trying to remember what the other... There was another AI robot book that I think our book club read, maybe?
Clara and the Sun?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think people who like Clara and the Sun should also read this. I think they're together a very interesting kind of look into robots.
That's high on my list.
Yeah.
I love anything with robots learning feelings, whether it's Clara or Murderbot or not a robot, but... You know, Barbie, even Velveteen Rabbit, just toys becoming self-aware. I'm down.
Love it. Yeah, I think you would like this one a lot. It was really interesting, and also like does not shy away from the humanity of it all and stuff like that. And then I finally listened to Good Boy, My Life in Seven Dogs by Jennifer Finney Boylan, which I've been meaning to read for years. I love Jenny Boylan. And this is, of course, a memoir of her life framed by seven dogs that she has owned. And she explores her journey of gender identity and transitioning from male to female. And it is beautiful and heartbreaking and funny. She's so funny at times. And like, yeah, it's a great book. It's a great memoir. So highly recommend that one as well. That's what I've been up to.
Nice. Does Kate, do you want to share some things?
Sure.
And then...
So I am not on the cutting edge. My books are already out, some of
so
which had been out for about a year. But I just recently finished Fern Brady's memoir, Strong Female Character.
Yes, you're telling me about this.
It is fantastic. I've got it on our staff recs now. But I highly, highly, highly recommend you listen to it because she has the thickest Scottish brogue. She is Fern Brady, and she uses that voice to her advantage. She's a fantastic stand-up comedian and writer, and she was fantastic on Taskmaster.
That's why I know her name.
She is far too clever for her own good, which is what people have been telling her entire life, because she is a woman in her 30s who just got her autism diagnosis.
Oh, there it is. Yep.
She was told for years, you need to pay more attention. You need to do this. You need to do that. How come you can't focus? You have the devil inside you. You're evil. You can't be autistic. You make eye contact. You've had a boyfriend. So it's her story from cradle to now with her really conservative family and her adventures in being a stripper to play for journalism school and getting into comedy and finding other people online with their adult diagnoses and trying to figure out what to do next.
Incredible.
Yeah, she talks a lot about how she didn't have anybody in her circle to talk to about this, so why not tell a bunch of strangers and see if they feel better too, which
amazing.
I like. I am currently reading Someone You Can Build a Nest In.
Okay.
Yes.
That's on my list.
John Wisewell. Came out a couple weeks ago. I have barely cracked that spine open, but it is a delightful, gross, sticky, icky horror fantasy of unknown evil and monsters who are going to build a nest in you, and perhaps you two will find love.
Fantastic.
There's hope for all of us out there.
Of course. Oh my god. Yeah, that just bumped way. I've been looking at that one because the cover is really striking.
That's what got me. I saw the cover a couple Tuesdays ago and said, must read this immediately.
Yeah, and I've seen a couple other, horror folks who I trust who've loved it, but none of them actually summarized what it was about. They just said, you got to read this. And I was like, I trust you, but also, I have other things to read, so I'll get to it. But this, that's next for me. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. As is, this also came out last week, Bitter Water Opera by Nicolette Polek. Mm-hmm. Imagine you are going through a bad breakup, and while you're doing that, you write a fan letter to a long-deceased, incredible dancer and artist who then is maybe a ghost and shows up at your house.
Great.
Incredible. Yep, shows up at your house, wandering around barefoot, eating your food, painting on your walls. Are they real? Are you real? Is anything okay? Nobody knows. It was beautiful, and it's so short. It's a really little novella, and it took a couple days to get over before I could think about reading anything else.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Joe, what
have you been reading?
So, a bunch of different things, because I can't settle anywhere on anything. So, I read the new biography of Candy Darling called Candy Darling Dreamer Icon Superstar by Cynthia Carr. And Candy Darling was a trans woman. She was one of the last Warhol superstars. So, she died in 1974 because it was the 50th anniversary of her death when the book came out, which was just last month. So it is most of her adult life was lived in the West Village, East Village scene. A lot of time spent at Warhol's factory. I feel like it's hard to explain this specific setting without a lot of background, but if you are a Velvet Underground fan, there is a song Candy Says that's about Candy Darling. She is mentioned in Walk on a Wild Side by Lou Reed, as are other trans women who were are in this book a lot. So it's really this kind of look at her life, but it also gives a really interesting look at the trans rights movement and the queer liberation movement of the late 60s and how this all came together and what was going on and how different trans people were relating to this. Because Candy Darling was far from a, like, perfect icon of activism. She was very focused on, you know, becoming a superstar, and that was her focus. She was much less involved in the activism, but this was all happening around her, and I think it was a really interesting, in-depth look into this very specific point in time through this flawed but really interesting and complicated person. And I learned a lot about both, like, the Warhol scene, the 60s, the, you know, I mean, everybody is in this book. You're just gonna be like, oh, there's Lou Reed, oh, Patti Smith, okay, great, oh, Jane Fonda, cool, oh, Lily Tomlin, oh, okay, what,
oh, my
everybody,
God.
Like, yeah, so many fascinating figures. And yeah, it's a really interesting look. And something that struck me was I didn't realize how early some of the trans exclusionary radical feminist ideas were popping up, like,
gross,
almost exactly the same time. Like, it's really interesting. There's Candy New was friendly with Valerie Solanas, who shot Andy Warhol. So not a paragon of, like, virtue and good choices, but she became pretty adamant in the anti-trans movement after she got out of prison for attempting to assassinate Warhol. So it's a very interesting book, and I listened to the audiobook. The audiobook narrator is fantastic.
Nice.
Definitely. Highly recommend it. I also listened to When the Angels Left the Old Country by Sasha Lam, which won the New England Book Award for YA this past year.
Yes.
And I'm disappointed that I took so long to read it. It is a queer Jewish YA book. It is about an angel and a demon who are following people from their small village in Poland to America in the early 1900s.
Ooh.
It has very Good Omens vibes, obviously.
Oh my, like, God.
Yeah. And it's funny and dark and really fascinating. And it's like this moment in, again, a very specific moment in time, and looking at these people moving from Eastern Europe to New York and what was happening and how they were being taken advantage of. And there's also lots of queer characters and a fun angel and demon friendship. And
yay,
it's fantastic.
Love that.
I also read The Extinction of Irina Ray by Jennifer Croft.
Ooh.
So Jennifer Croft is Olga Tokarczuk's translator.
Okay.
She has written a memoir. This is her first fiction that she has written herself. And this book is about a group of translators who only work with this one Polish author. And when she writes a book, they all go to her house. It's on the edge of this, like, spooky forest in Poland. And they all translate her books into their various languages at the same time. And so she's called them all to her house and to work on her latest book. And she disappears. And everything starts falling apart. And so the book set over 7 weeks of these translators staying in her house, just them in her house. And it's very cultish behavior. Like, they've lost their leader and they're all falling apart. And the best part about this book is it is the Spanish language translators account of this time that's she wrote in Polish and is being translated into English by the English translator who is also in the story.
Whoa.
And they hate each other, and the English translator keeps having footnotes that are like, this is just her particular perspective, or like, no, that wasn't what I was thinking, and like,
oh,
going my back
God.
And forth on what actually happened in a way that like makes both the narrator really unreliable, but also the translator is unreliable, and it's fascinating.
Wow. This sounds like a trip.
It's a trip. It is wild, and it is a book that like you can tell she has a lot of thoughts about translation and like what art is and who, not necessarily who owns art, but like what it means to create art and what it means to translate it. And she has been huge in getting translators' names on the covers of books. Like, that has been a big
awesome.
Thing she's been advocating for, because I definitely have times where I'm looking at a book and I'm like, this seems like maybe it was translated, but I have no, like, indication.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is, you know, an Argentinian author. Like, what...
Yep.
It was it, and then you flip like into the acknowledgments or whatever, and you're like, "Oh, yes, it was okay." So she's been big on that. So it's a really interesting, super weird book. A couple others I want to mention. I have started By Any Other Name by Jodi Picoult.
Excellent.
Yes. So we are going to have the launch event.
Yes, it's in
August. I am going to pull it up. I was doing that and then I get distracted. August 15th. So the book doesn't come out till the 20th.
Yeah.
So you will get your book 5 days early if you come to the event.
Ooh.
And there are signed copies, and there's going to be a meet and greet, correct?
Yes, there will be like a professional photo opportunity after the event. She will be pre-signing them, so she won't be signing your book in the line. You will receive your book signed when you arrive at the event. It is one book per one ticket. There are no ticket bundles. You get every ticket comes with a book.
Yeah.
So that is to that's just how her entire tour is going.
Yeah.
We're very excited.
So now that we've done the advertising portion of it.
Yes, tell me about the book.
The book is about a woman in 2023 who is a playwright who has basically stopped writing plays, and she has stopped writing them in a professional manner. She has a passion project she's been working on that is a play about her ancestor, Amelia Bassano, who was a real woman, one of the earliest women to publish poetry in English. And this play is about the theory that her ancestor was the one who actually wrote Shakespeare's plays.
How dare.
Blasphemy. This is a thing that is... So, if you're in the Shakespeare realm, you might be aware of there was a... Elizabeth Winkler wrote an article in The Atlantic in, I believe, 2019 that was put forth this theory about this specific person. She then, in the past year, came out with a book called Shakespeare Was a Woman and Other Heresies, I believe?
Yeah, I think it's heresies, yeah.
And so now... Jodi Picoult is picking up from that, and it's very much tied to that specific theory. She thanks her in the acknowledgments, like, and so it is, so far in where I'm at in the book, they have not gotten to the ancestor writing the plays, but it's switching between perspectives of the woman in 2023 and her ancestor Amelia doing
interesting
writing and growing as a young woman in the late 16th century. So if you like historical fiction and it's and you know interesting theories about historical events, it's very well written and it's very interesting.
Yeah, and I've always found that Jodi Picoult in general is extremely readable. Like, she's compulsively readable. Her books are like, they're page turners, regardless of what, like, any of her subjects are. They're like, you start it and you're like, yeah, I'm not doing anything else until I finish this book.
Yeah, so. I'm going to be an expert in this now. This is all I need to know. Here we go.
Yeah.
So. And the last ones I want to shout out is I read Northanger Abbey and now am reading Persuasion by Jane Austen, which is very. This is apparently my personality now. Northanger Abbey, so both of these books were published after Jane Austen's death. Northanger Abbey was the first novel she finished.
After she died?
Okay, so sorry. Okay, I should explain. Sorry, yes. She finished it. She tried to get it picked up. It didn't get picked up by a publisher. It's languished in her... papers, and her family published it. Persuasion is the last book that she wrote, so they're very, very different books. Northanger Abbey is about a girl who is obsessed with gothic romances, and she goes to stay with friends who live in Northanger Abbey, this old abbey that's very creepy, and, like, she starts thinking maybe there are secrets hidden, and, like, what's their father up to, and kind of creates a gothic romance plot for herself. And it's great, and it's very... a great example of just, like, how witty and smart and fascinating Jane Austen was, and how on top, like, I don't know. She's very funny. It's a funny book, but it's also very good argument, because, like, novels at that time were considered... it almost is the way a lot of people will talk about romance as a genre now. It is silly, it's frivolous, it's unnecessary, they're not well written, they're not... obviously, we don't believe this about romance, let's be clear.
Right, but to be very clear,
way the scapegoat at the time. Talk about it, and Jane Austen's putting forth through this book a lot of arguments of being like, no, novels are great. Like, actually, novels are really cool, and you are mad about it because the best ones are written by women. Sorry. Yeah,
that's the Louisa May Alcott story, too.
Yeah. So that one, I absolutely loved it. It's super fun. And then Persuasion is not fun, but it's good. So it is generally considered, like, her most mature work, because it is about a woman past her prime at 27, I think.
Oh, dear God.
I know. She's certainly not 30. Like, she's somewhere in that late 20s phase. But she had been engaged to a man who did not have any fortune, and she was convinced by a family friend that she should not be engaged with him. She broke the engagement. And she has, for the past 8 years, basically been regretting this choice, and then her family has gotten into some dire financial straits. They have to rent out their home, their fancy manor home, and his family starts to rent it. And so suddenly he's back in her life.
Oh my God.
And he now has money. He's in the Navy, which you could make a lot of money in the Navy, because, like, you would take money from ships you captured.
Pirates,
basically, yeah.
Legal pirates.
Like, stealing stuff from privateers. Anyway, and so now he's, like, an actual eligible prospect, and maybe he's going to court one of her sister-in-laws, and, like, she's all, you know, not sure how to handle it, and very... sad, basically. Yeah. And that's where I'm at now, is they're back in each other's lives, but nothing has happened. And the very last thing I will mention is Jane Austen, The Secret Radical by Helena Kelly, which is a book I've been reading alongside the Jane Austens. There's a chapter on each book, and I've been reading them as I along. It's an interesting book. There are lots of... basically, the concept is that the way we read Jane Austen, we don't necessarily have all of the cultural context to understand everything she's saying in her books. and so looking more into the political times and some of what was going on and what you can see in her books. It's really interesting. There are some really interesting perspectives on it. I do think it is one of those books, and I find this a lot with, you know, being a Shakespeare person and reading books about Shakespeare, where I think it's always important to be skeptical and not just portray people we admire the way we wish they were. Mm. Of, you know, some of this is very interesting and some of it is very like, oh, okay, I didn't understand that or I didn't realize that. And some of it's like, I'm not sure that I would say that line can make the argument that, like, Jane Austen was an abolitionist.
Sure, right.
So I think it's one of those kind of theory books that is really interesting and can give great perspectives, but be cautious about adopting everything it says into your perspective of
They are theories, not facts.
They are theories, and there are some... use your critical thinking and decide what makes sense to you. But it is a really interesting book and going a lot more into the context of the time.
That's cool. I will say Joe hand-sold me Northanger Abbey.
I did.
And I am fully prepared to read that and let that become part of my personality for a while.
Oh, because, it's so delightful. My God. You have
so
to.
Fun. It's so excited.
And I will say for anybody, because I know Ryan has said before that sometimes the language of Jane Austen can be a lot. I will say it's probably her simplest written. Like,
awesome.
It's very, again, it's very early and it's still incredibly sharp, incredibly smart, but, like, it definitely, switching from that to persuasion, I'm like, oh my gosh, these sentences have 85 different sections. Like, what's happening?
I need a
oh
new degree God. To understand this
what's,
sentence.
What's happening?
When you're writing as a ghost, it's really hard to hold a quill. So it's a lot simpler.
I'm excited. I'm here for gothic romances. Give it to me.
Mm-hmm. And it's short, so.
Yes, it is.
One of the shortest. Persuasion and Northanger Abbey are the shortest.
It was delightful when I picked it up, and I was like, all right. And then I opened it, and, like, the first, like, half of the book that I was holding was just, like, introductions and stuff. And I was like, oh!
And then, like, the last 20 pages
itty-bitty.
Is notes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is itty-bitty. I can do this. All right. Cool. All right.
Okay.
Kate, you have... You have brought us something today.
I've brought a list of items here.
I'm excited. Please tell us what's happening here.
So I'm here today to talk a little bit about magical realism.
Ooh, incredible. Woo, we
which
love.
Is a category that I really like and that I like more the older I get.
Nice.
But if I look back on it, I think my obsession with magical realism didn't come from school books or whatnot when I was little. It came up from growing up Catholic.
There it is.
So all these fantastical stories and familiar things happening with saints having their heads cut off and then carrying them home to their own church, or wounds flowing with blood and honey, or women holding tongs in their hands crowned in a wreath of their own teeth that were pulled out. This was all fed to me as a child. The way that I guess kids read comic books for the most part now. So the lives of the saints was huge for me.
I'm so sad that I didn't have saints. Like, I read a lot of Bible stories growing up. Loved Jesus. Loved a Jesus story, but wish I had some saints.
Yeah, I was raised Protestant, not Catholic, so I did not get the saints. Yeah.
We had saints. We had blood. We had guts. We had Jesus himself making Thomas stick his fingers through the wounds in his hand.
That's so cool. So,
exactly. So I'm a little kid going, this is the best! And my parents are saying, you need to take this seriously. And, well, I suppose we were all taking it seriously in the sense that we were putting the fantastic with the familiar. Mm. But that is kind of where my love of the magical realism came from, because I went from saints into Greek mythology, into every bit of mythology and folklore you could come across, because it's kind of taking that fantastical and making it real. There's like a melancholy to it. There's a feeling of anything could happen and will happen, and it's probably happening because you did something wrong that you don't know about, and you're going to be punished forever. A lot of magical realism, and especially the like the canon, right? You think Isabel Allende, you think Gabriel Garcia Marquez, you think a lot of Latin American authors and culture, and what do you know? They had Catholicism foisted on them violently. And so a lot of that feeling comes through. And I started when I was younger with 100 Years of Solitude, which I love and still love. And
I need to reread
will always
that.
Love. Yeah. It's one that I can reread. Love in the Time of Cholera did not work for me
on not as well
the second
for me.
Run.
Yeah.
But 100 Years of Solitude kept getting better.
Yeah.
But you've got your classics, and outside of the Latin American canon, there are so many other voices and little communities. One of my current favorite authors who's working right now, just had a book come out last month, is Helen Oyeyemi, who is Nigerian and lives in England and mixes together tons of Protestant imagery with Yoruba folklore, with fairy tales, with Bluebeard, with talking animals, with magical trains.
What book's the Bluebeard one?
The Bluebeard one is Mr. Fox.
Okay.
And that's probably my favorite. But what is it? Parasol Against the Axe just came out and loved it. Also has a beautiful cover. I tend to like books with beautiful covers.
Regan loved that one too.
Regan
she was like, Joe, you need to read this one. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, man.
One of the big things that happens in it is there's a book that's traveling around that every time someone picks it up and reads from it, it's different. Sometimes it's a spy novel.
That.
Sometimes it's a romance. Sometimes it's the fall of communism. It's a lot of different things, and no one can agree. And there's a lot of argument and peril over what is actually in this book, and is this book actually real? And what is anybody actually experiencing? That's one of the things that I
That's so cool!
Yeah! That's what I love about magical realism. Helen Oyeyemi is doing that in Parasol Against the Axe. Kelly Link is the absolute queen of that. Kelly Link writes in a way that you're thinking, I need to dig in my purse and find my phone. And instead of your phone, you pull out a rabbit. And you're like,
incredible.
Wait, did I put this rabbit in here? Why does it have my mom's face? Is this my purse? Did I have a phone? What are phones? How did I get here? Kelly Link is really the link, I'm sorry. the link between a lot of literature that will pick up in the bookstore and then things that you'll find online. I don't think a lot of creepypasta could exist without magical realism. In Magic for Beginners, one of her collections, which is, I wanted to call this Magical Realism for Beginners, but I'll relax. There's this TV show that you never know when it's on, and it's different actors every time, and sometimes they're watching you, and sometimes your friends are there. It's
God,
like if Pete
this.
And Pete was super creepy. So it hooked me immediately as a weird Pete and Pete watching kid,
amazing.
And now a weird magical realism reading adult. I want to see how many times I can say magical realism before I trip over it. But to get away with something wild here, I have brought you a game.
A game!
About magical
game.
Realism.
Okay.
So.
I'm excited.
Before we get into the game, and I had asked you this earlier, can you define magical realism in terms of how you like to define it?
I was going to say, well, Merriam-Webster defines it as. I would say that it is, I took notes here, it's the real world with undercurrents of fantasy and myth. So fables, folk tales, myths, all of these things mashed into our current social times, or the current social time of when the book was written or taking place, stemming a lot from Latin American culture and just spreading throughout the world. To me, it is magic things happening and us not commenting on the fact that they're magic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Things that are fantastic, but maybe they did happen. Maybe I just didn't remember that right. Maybe this statue is supposed to cry blood and I'm the one who's crazy.
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so making this delineation between, because like I have definitely seen a lot of people, a lot of different definitions of magical realism over the years, and like things that I would consider more like urban fantasy that are like magic and wizards in New York that people call magical realism and isn't necessarily, and to be clear, like you can call things what you want to call them. I don't want to be like making, sorting things into like this is correct and this isn't correct, but I do think it's worth having a definition for what we're talking about in this specific context.
I agree. Like when I think of magical realism, I think it's the book, like Water for Chocolate, maybe.
Yes.
And it's like everything about the world in that book is totally normal except the food is magic. Like that, like, and that's like the only thing, and it's just sort of like, it just is.
That's real life, too, though. Food is totally food magic.
Food is magic. but like, so that's where like I. Yeah, it, to me, when I think of magical realism, it's like, yeah, there's like one piece that's like a little bit extra magic, and then everything else is like normal for the time, as opposed to like an urban fantasy where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of magic happening, and maybe nobody's commenting on it because that's just the world they live in.
Yeah.
That's how I delineate it, I guess, in my mind.
No, I agree. If you're going from kind of the big list of what happens when you search for how should I read magical realism, you get like Water for Chocolate, you get 100 Years of Solitude, you get Salman Rushdie, you get Toni Morrison's Beloved, Song of Solomon. So those were early magical realism reads for me too in high school. Thank you, Mrs. Ogren, wherever you are, best teacher I ever had. But I didn't have a label for it yet.
Yeah.
I tried to pull a lot of things now that are pretty recent.
Cool.
So people are really continuing in these tracks. Kelly Link, obviously, my love. she really pulls on kind of New England gothic weirdness. Claire Oshetsky does that too. Very cold, clammy, muddy. This deer is speaking to you. Just you, though. Nobody else can see it. Is it a pile of laundry? Is it a deer? It's both. Louise Erdrich's Future Home of the Living God. It's one of my absolute favorites because it's a little bit of sci-fi. It's a little bit of the end of the world. It's a lot of both Ogallala Sioux, Cree, and Catholic mythology mashed all together.
Okay. Cool.
I like the mash.
Yeah.
The monster mash, if you will. And speaking of the mash.
Yes, sorry for cutting off.
Oh, game you didn't time. Cut me off. I needed that. Because I wanted to say, would you say that you are fans or aficionados of magical realism?
I'd say a fan.
I'm definitely a fan, not an aficionado, I don't think.
That's okay. I think we've got an idea to work with.
Exciting.
How do you feel about real magicalism?
Say more things, Kate. Yeah.
So, I have a little game for you. I have a couple quotations pulled from some big, big, big magical realism books, some that we've already mentioned, some that we haven't. And then I have some that I've pulled from spell books and miscellany.
Yes.
So you're going to have to tell me, is it magical realism or is it real magicalism? Which I will say 40 different ways, because that's not a real term, but it is now. If you word anything hard enough, it'll get there. All right, so we're going to go back and forth.
Okay, great.
And I will be asking you, after reading the quote, which one is it?
Okay.
And then there will be a bonus point if you can guess the specific piece that it came from.
Okay.
Whew. Okay, so you're going to ask, like, Ryan one, and I'm not going to say something, and then you'll ask me one?
Yes.
Okay, okay. I just didn't want to, like, start jumping on.
It's okay. You can have the opportunity to steal if we're stumped, but I didn't want you to have to worry about slamming buzzers and whatnot.
That's fair.
Because that's more of a timer game. Yeah. This is a knowledge game.
Yes, and I can edit out long pauses.
So it seems like we're on top of it.
So if you get the answer correct, you'll hear the train sound. And if you get the answer incorrect, you'll hear this not very slidey slide whistle.
Amazing.
All right. Ryan, okay. I'm going to start with you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
A house for a spirit is an important thing. It needs no higher details, only to be filled with meaning and purpose. Magical realism or real magicalism?
Oh, man. That's so good, because I could so picture that in, like, an actual spell book, but also that sounds like the opening to a novel.
It's almost like I picked them this way on purpose.
You're too good at this. All right, I'm going to say real magicalism.
That is real magicalism. That is from the North American Compendium of Folk Magic.
Nice.
Real magicalism. Fantastic. Well done.
Nailed it.
All right. Joe.
Oh, gosh.
That's why it's important to keep your distance from people who have frigid breath. Just their presence can put out the most intense fire.
See, now I would have gotten the other one wrong, the one that you gave Ryan. And I'll do magical realism.
Correct, Joe!
I have no idea what it's from.
Ryan, would you care to guess what it's from?
Oh, frigid breath. I got nothing.
Ah, that is like water for chocolate.
Oh, wow! In my defense, I read that in high school, which was so many years
totally
ago.
Better. I think, yeah, like the Marquez and Rushdie that I read a ton of, I haven't read since grad school.
It's been a million
we'll
years.
And if it helps, if I did not have these papers in front of me, I would know none of these answers. All right, we are all tied up at 1v1.
Ooh.
Ryan.
Okay.
Anything dead coming back to life hurts.
Oh, man. I'm going to say magical realism.
Well done. Care to take a try at what it's from?
Oh, I have no idea.
Joe, would you like to try a steal?
Coming back. I'm just trying to think of, like, style.
Like, it feels like it could be a Kelly Link quote, but I don't know.
It feels more...
Like, it might realistic. Be Book of Love, but...
Also Neil Gaiman. There's something Neil Gaiman to it. I don't know, Kate.
That was Toni Morrison in Beloved.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. Tricky Tony got us in there.
Gosh. Honestly, you could quote, like, Josh Malerman to me, and I'd be like, I don't know.
Who is it? What?
I know. You could read back to me the transcript of what I said maybe 10 minutes ago, and I would swear that was not me. 100%. That was the ghost of Jane Austen.
Yeah.
All right. Joe.
Okay.
You must, of course, take care to light the matches one at a time. If a powerful emotion should ignite them all at once, they would produce a splendor so dazzling it would illuminate far beyond what we can normally see.
I'm going with real magicalism.
Dang! Oh, man, I also
I'm
was going to...
sorry, Joe. Yeah. That was magical realism.
Oh.
That was our good friend, Like Water for Chocolate.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right,
man.
Back to Ryan.
Okay.
Wear dark glasses, bathe with lavender oil, and cool fresh water. Seek shelter from the sun at noon.
This sounds just like Ryan's MO.
This is just good advice.
Oh, I'm sorry. This was my schedule for today.
That's just my to-do list at the beach.
Yeah, we are three people who very much need to seek shelter from the sun at all times.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say real magicalism. Ah, man.
So that one was tricky. That's from Practical Magic. Oh, Alice Hoffman's Practical Magic.
Like practical. I feel like that is such a Practical Magic, like, list of, you know, whatever, grow rosemary or whatever, salt over your shoulder.
Never talk to this, never go here. Very nice.
I see you, Alice Hoffman.
All right. Joe, are you ready?
We're still neck and neck, so I'm...
I think we're still tied.
Because we both got the last one wrong. Okay, go.
First of the line is tied to a tree, and the last is eaten by ants.
Magical realism.
Correct!
I feel like it's Marquez, but I don't know...
Is it 100 Years of Solitude? It is 100 Years of Solitude, and Joe is riding the victory train.
Something about the line. I was like, okay, family.
Yeah, if I was reading these in their original languages, it would probably be a big giveaway.
Fair.
True. That's actually, you have to do this now. Perfect accent, perfect pronunciation in every language.
I would get super canceled within two of these.
Kate's first and last time on the pod.
Yeah, we had to stop the podcast. We had to close the store. Kate tried this accent. It was a disaster. All right, Ryan.
Oh, boy.
The bulk strength of the bull is transformed to his manure, which is bandaged to the arm or limb to effect a cure.
I really hope it's magical realism.
Wow. I got so distracted because I am a Taurus and we're officially in Taurus season. And I was like, bull! And then you started talking about manure and strapping to arms, and I'm going to say real magicalism.
Yeah.
That is from the Backwoods Witchcraft. Well done.
Read it for us, because...
I want to hear that again.
You just want to hear more about manure?
Yeah.
That happens to a lot of us. The bulk strength of the bull is transferred to his manure, which is bandaged to the arm or limb to effect a cure.
Wow. So are you putting... Is this suggesting we put bull... on open wounds? Is this, what's happening here? What's the cure? Is this, I'm concerned.
Well, it doesn't say anything about an open wound, but it does say to put it on your body with a bandage.
Yeah.
Wow. So it could be,
maybe open like wound, a cramp or something.
Bandage.
Yeah.
Joe, I am not an anthropologist, nor a historian, nor a researcher. I did not learn this tradition from reading books or ancient codices. I learned the old-fashioned way.
I'm going with real magicalism because it seems so...
Sounds like an intro to a spellbook.
Correct. That is from the Complete Book of North American Folk Magic.
Incredible.
Ding, ding, ding. All right. After several rounds, we've got Joe up 5, Ryan at 3.
Ooh.
Ryan, here we go.
Oh, boy.
Hell is not black or fiery. It is an unvaried gray without promise.
Magical realism.
Magical realism,
correct? I sounded so confident on that. Yeah. I have no idea what that's from.
is it Satanic Verses?
No, but that is a good guess.
Yeah.
So this one was Future Home of the Living God.
Very cool.
All right, hopping over to Joe.
Okay, Kate has an evil grin. Yeah.
It's not evil. You'll realize immediately I've got the sillies here.
Okay, great.
Always throw spilled salt over your left shoulder. Keep rosemary by your garden gate. Add pepper to your mashed potatoes. Plant roses and lavender for luck.
Magical realism, practical magic by Alice Hoffman.
Correct. Correct. Joe, who's like, I don't know if I'm an aficionado, who quotes Practical Magic.
Incredible.
Joe's not telling you, but they have a full, like, forearm tattoo of that spell.
All the flowers on my arm are actually just that.
It's just lavender and rosemary. And salt, actually.
Salt.
Oh my god, amazing.
All right.
Oh boy.
Back to Ryan. White is for witching, a color to be worn so that all other colors can enter you, so that you may use them. In a pinch, cream will do.
I'm so glad cream will do.
Yeah, you gotta summon your fires directly from hell. If not, store-bought will do.
I'll say real magicalism.
Oh, Joe looks like they want to steal.
Isn't there a Helen Oyami book called White is for Witching?
Ooh, yes, there is!
Very ding, cool!
Ding, 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 ding. Thank you. I don't know why I know that. I have not read it. I just, this is that weird booksellery.
Yeah, when you just pull knowledge.
Yep, you look at a couple things a couple times, and it replaces your friend's birthday.
Yeah.
It replaces your license plate number.
Yep.
It's just, I know this book, and I can tell you what color it is, too.
Yeah, yeah, when you, like, randomly pull a title and author out of your brain, and then you go, how did I know that?
What is that from? Where did that come from?
Incredible. Loved that.
All right. So that was Joe's steal, and now this goes to Joe.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
Boy, here we go. Gosh.
If a woman is in trouble, she should always wear blue.
Good to know.
Ryan, are you in trouble?
I'm wearing so much blue right now.
Ryan and I are both wearing blue.
Oh, God.
I don't think I'm in trouble. Oh, dear.
What if I am
go
in trouble?
With real magicalism? Oh.
Gotta say, Joe, I'm pretty disappointed because that was Practical Magic!
Yeah.
The tables have turned.
That does kind of make sense.
Practical Magic has, well, as I suppose a title like Practical Magic would, lots of practical lists of magic.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess if you need a guide and you're not ready for, like, the North American Magic Folk Compendium, yeah, you can try out Practical Magic.
Practical Magic.
Ryan.
Okay.
Back to you.
Oh, boy.
Things live, change, devour, and die at some point, and we belong to that cycle. It does not belong to us.
I'm gonna... Oh, man. So many of these could be... like, yeah, that's an opening to a great book, or just part of an introduction. Oh, gosh. I'll stick with my guns and once again say real magicalism. Nice.
Correct! That was from the North American Folk Magic book.
Hooray!
You can tell that one's pretty cool.
Yeah!
And on our shelves right now.
Hey, amazing.
All of the books being used in this game are here at the store.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
All right. Jumping over to Joe. Some for the birds and some for I, some for the beetle and some for the fly, some to rot and some to grow. Lord bless the seeds, I now do sow.
I'm going with magical realism. Oh.
I'm sorry, Joe, that's from Backwoods Witchcraft. Witchcraft.
That truly could have been
it
anything.
It could have been,
like, it could have been literally anything.
It's true. It's... Let's
She's
see
too good
here.
At these. What we're gonna find out later that none of these are from any books, and it's all just Kate has made up all of these.
All of these papers are blank. This is just stream of consciousness.
All
for
the
me.
Listeners are hearing something different.
Every time I pick up this book, it says something different. All right, Ryan.
Okay.
Sleep with an open scissors under your bed, with the points at your feet. And the handles at your head. We've hit the rhyming portion.
Great advice. Oh boy.
magical realism? I was gonna say real magicalism, but then I was like, I don't know, it sounds kind of...
That's real magicalism, man. A totally real term, but from the very real book, Italian Folk Magic.
Ooh, wow.
Italian Folk Magic.
Man. They do like their scissors, those Italians.
It's true.
There's one thing I know about Italians.
We like our scissors. All right. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Definitions belong to the definers, not the defined.
Oh, this seems to be getting harder.
Okay. Well, I didn't prepare it. I'm just pulling it out of my head, so that might be happening.
Magical realism.
Oh, woohoo! God,
okay.
Amazing.
Want to take a guess at what it's from?
Am I just going to keep guessing Rushdie until I get it right? But maybe...
Not Rushdie. Ryan, would you like to try to steal?
Practical Magic.
It was old Toni Morrison in Beloved.
How do we... I haven't read Beloved in a long time. Yeah. Okay.
I also didn't take very well-known quotes.
I took quotes
that would suit my game.
Yes.
I only read horror, so...
Beloved is kind of...
It's
didn't Grady Hendrix, like, write an article about how Beloved's horror... Anyway.
It is... Horrific.
It is. But that's true.
But it's also very good. All right, Ryan.
Okay.
Three ladies came from the east, one with fire and two with frost. Out with the fire and in with the frost.
Whoa. That could be taken literally as magical realism, or that could just be like... someone describing how weather works.
I've got this weird text from my mom.
Yeah, my dad's told me I need to drive safely because 30 minutes.
Did you take your snow tires off? I mean, I know it's almost May, but the three women are here.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll say magical realism.
Ah!
See, I was right.
So that was real magicalism. That is a spell to use when you burn yourself.
Interesting.
I don't know what you should use if you burn someone else, but if you burn yourself, you got to talk to the three ladies.
Okay.
Talk to those ladies.
Talk to the ladies.
Noted.
All right. Joe?
Yes.
If they believe it in the Bible, I don't see why they shouldn't believe it from me. Me, Kate McKay.
Magical realism.
Correct!
I don't know.
It's okay.
I don't know.
Ryan, want to steal?
Gosh. Kelly Link.
100 years of solitude.
I think both times I guess Kelly Link is 100 years of solitude. I only know like three people. I do love
Kelly Link. Kelly Link is my favorite, but I don't think I put any Kelly Link quotes in here her words are so perfect and wonderful.
That's
it would have
true.
Given it all away.
That is
Meanwhile,
fair.
Meanwhile, I'm just going to just keep saying Salman Rushdie until the game ends because I don't know. That's the first magical realism I read, so I see.
That's all we got.
All right. Over to Ryan.
Okay. Here we go.
A person does not belong to a place until there is someone dead under the ground.
I like that.
Whoa.
So you don't own your home until you've buried a body in it, I think is what this means.
Yes. Right? Hey, I don't own a home. You two, on the other hand, I'm concerned about.
I mean, I have purchased a home. Apparently, I don't own it.
Well, yeah.
To my
knowledge. Do we own anything?
So when Ryan invites you guys to come hang out, don't go. Don't go to her house, okay?
My body was there. My house was built in 1800, so if there isn't a body in there, I'm going to be disappointed.
I will say magical realism.
Correct!
One.
What's it from?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Is it Practical Magic again?
No, it's 100 years of solitude again.
You know, I almost guessed that.
I think we're up to about 400 years of solitude now.
Man. I was just like, I know there are some very bonny and practical magics.
Yeah.
Like,
that
and that body just dark. Won't stay buried. All right, Joe.
Yes.
Ooh, this is going to be our last question, because I had too many. Which one will it be? Which one will it be? It'll be this one. You don't have to know the language. Read it phonetically. There is magic in the words that have been handed down for generations.
Magical realism.
I'm sorry, Joe. That was Italian folk magic.
Oh, okay. That kind of that makes sense. That
tracks. Right,
okay.
From Strega Nona herself.
Can we hear your other one and just guess, even if it doesn't count for points?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Be sure all of your words have been lost to the fire, as you don't want an unwanted pair of eyes to come across them.
I'd say real magicalism.
Real magicalism.
And I'd say you're both right. That is from the Witch's Book of Spellcraft.
Oh.
So our grand total. Both of you did very admirably well. Ryan rung in with 6 correct answers, but could not beat Joe with 10.
Whoa.
Joe is both magical and real. Your prize is this visual joke. A round of applause. And now I'll go the other way.
Oh, man. Incredible.
Oh, my goodness.
That was... Should we have games every episode?
Yeah,
listeners, let us know.
Yeah, this is now Kate's side job at Gibson's, is just coming up with podcast games. You don't necessarily have to do all of them on the podcast. You just monthly have to give us a game.
My other idea for this one was novella or Nutella. Yes. So you'll have to have me back to see what that does.
It's truly...
Speaking of in translation.
This is... Hey, we can't know yet. We have to bring Kate back to know what that means. To find out.
Nutella or novella? Are all of these going to be slightly Italian themed? I don't know.
I mean,
maybe. I do have one guarantee. Wow. They will all be book themed.
Wow. That was incredible. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you so much for letting me do this. I had a great time.
It
so
was good.
We'll see
delightful.
If I'm still allowed in the bookstore tomorrow.
Goodness gracious. I want to know, for the listeners who played along at home, I want to know what your final score was.
Yeah,
so
please let us know.
Yes, right in.
Were
right
you screaming, in. Oh my gosh, Joe, it's practical magic. How could you not know that?
Take your final score. Write it on a piece of parchment, put it under your pillow with 2 drops of blood, and think of me really, really strongly, and I'll know your answers. Because I am the ghost of Jane Austen, and that's how literature and games work.
And on that note... a reminder about our partnership with our dear friends at Libre FM. If you are new to Libre FM, you can receive 2 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when you start a new membership. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com for a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, including all of the magical realism and real magicalism. You can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them. And all of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode. And consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye! Bye!